Cold calling. Is it alive? Is it dead? Has it changed? Is it the same? We're going to dig into all of that in the episode today. Thanks for tuning in. My name's Jason Bay. You're listening to Outbound Squad. I'm really passionate about helping you turn strangers into paying customers. So if you're a sales leader leading a team of account executives or SDRs and you want them to make more cold calls, send more cold emails, but do it in a way where you're prioritizing quality, you're personalizing, and you're making this outbound pivot that you've been wanting to make in your organization, you're relying less on inbound, your AEs are able to self-source more pipeline. If any of those are things that are top of mind for you, you're definitely in the right place. Today is an episode. It's an audio excerpt of a live webinar that I did in person with Armand Farouk and Nick Sigelski from 30 Minutes to President's Club and Sarah Plowman, who, if you're not following on LinkedIn, I definitely recommend her giving her a follow. She films herself cold calling a bunch, and she's just got some great content. But we're doing a cold calling masterclass in this episode. So we go through everything from, hey, if I have reps dealing with call reluctance, how do I address that? We break apart the cold call into three parts, intro, hook, and close. So 80% of cold calls do not make it past the first 60 to 80 seconds. So how do we nail that intro? How do we avoid pitching in the intro? In the middle part, the hook, how do we come up with good problem-based questions that allow us to find a reason to meet? And then the close, how do we secure the meeting, get 80% plus show rates, et cetera? And then we'll do a little bit on objection handling as well. But this is a really fun show to do in person. We were in Brooklyn. I just moved out to the tri-state area, so I'm in New Jersey now, about 45 minutes or so away from the city. So I wanted to be out there. And this is my, I think, second full week in the area that I got to do this. So it's pretty fun. Take a listen. Leave an honest rating or review on Apple or Spotify, wherever you're listening to the podcast. Really helps us get in front of more sales leaders exactly like you. And without further ado, let's get to the episode. What's up, everyone? Thank you for joining us today. So we're going to do a cold calling masterclass. So we're going to talk about everything you need from when to pick up the phone, what to do when the prospect picks up, your openers, your hooks, and how to ultimately close and get the meeting and get the person to land and show up. Second thing, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, ZoomInfo. Let me reintroduce Sarah Plowman. I'm super excited to have you here. It's our first time meeting in person, like we had talked about.
Yes.
The thing that you guys should go connect with her on LinkedIn, she does these Friday cold calling blocks that she records, and they're just like so entertaining and helpful. So I'm a big fan. Excited to have you today.
Thank you.
Nick Sigelski, co-founder. He heads up sales at 30 NPC. He's a four-time AE and multiple top performer. Nick, good to
Thank
have you,
you
my
so
man.
So excited to be here. Thanks.
Armand, got another half Asian, right, on the set today.
Welcome to us.
So Armand was the second sales hire at Pave. He grew their ARR by 100x. So you've worked at Pave, Carta, Flex, and it's good to have you on, man. Okay, so cold calling. This is where I want to get started because I think that there's this debate around cold calling and whether it is dead or not. I don't want to have that debate because it clearly works. I think the question right now is it a productive use of my time? And where I'm kind of going with that is with connect rates being below 5% in most cases, if you don't have a dialer and you're making calls for an hour, you might talk to like one or two people. And I think the question really is this still a productive activity to do? And if not for that person, how do I make it more productive? So I kick the first question your way, Armand. Like cold calling, is this still a productive activity, especially for an AE, let's say, that's really busy working deals? Is this still a productive activity for them to do to book meetings?
Yeah, so the way that I like to answer this question is twofold. Number one, you have to look at the work that it takes to even be able to do a cold call. And then number two, you need to look at what it means to be a good cold caller. So my short answer is, if you're bad at cold calling, it's not worth the time.
Yep.
Because if you're not pruning your list, your connect rates are going to be around 2.5%, 3%, 4%. But if you're in the top quartile of connect rates by pruning your list, making sure that you have good contact data, all of those things, the top quartile of dialers can actually push toward the 10% connect rate. So if you believe that it takes 1 hour to make 40 cold calls, right? That means on average, you can make $200 in a week, right? And all the rest of the work in your sales day is the time it takes to research the accounts, pull the contact data, do all this other nonsense around prospecting. And so if you can make 200 cold calls in a week with 1 hour a day, and you're good on the phones, that can usually yield you at least 2 meetings if you're solid. And so I would ask yourself as a seller, where else in sales with 1 hour of time per day can you generate 2 extra meetings per week? And there aren't that many other channels that can do that, because a lot of the other work to find the accounts, research them, et cetera, is done before you make cold calls when you're sending cold emails anyways. So you might as well add the extra hour to do the cold calls.
Yeah, I want to highlight what you said there being the difference between an average and top performer, because what the data supports is, you know, LinkedIn Gong has stats around this. The average cold call success rate is like 2%.
Mm.
So you think like 50 connects to get a meeting is crazy versus yeah. 1 out of every 3 will make it productive. Sarah, I want to kick this question your way. So let's operate under the assumption, and what we're going to give you guys today is some really tactical things around like the breakdown of the call. What we want to talk about first is sort of the mindset and approach, because that's a big part of it. But one thing that sticks out to me that, again, it's really cool that you film yourself cold calling, because like your vibe and your energy, not to sound super woo-woo, is just like, I want to talk to you if you cold called me.
Yeah.
So I was wondering for you, is there anything that you do to get like the right energy or get into the right mindset? Is there a routine? A lot of caffeine. I had to like back off the caffeine before this because I was like, oh, I'm getting a little, you know. Yeah. What do you do to get your energy right and get into the right like mindset?
Yeah. So I think like in the beginning, like when you start to cold call, right? Like it is so nerve-wracking. It's can make you really, really anxious. And I'd be lying if I said that, you know, I wear many hats. I'm a full sales cycle rep. So like, I don't have the time to cold call as much as I did, you know, 6 months to a year ago. I'm constantly running meetings. I'm constantly looking to close deals. So, obviously even now I go through a few days where I don't cold call, and then I get to that Friday, right? Cause I really want to post a cold calling video and I still have the nerves. I'm like, oh my God, like this does never, it never gets old. So first off, give yourself some grace, because it's always hard to just start cold calling. But for me, standing up, I know that sounds like so cliche and like so little, but it's the littlest thing that you can do that honestly makes a great difference, because like power stance is a real thing. And yeah. I've spoke about this on my TikTok. I've spoke about this on LinkedIn, but my first manager at Pareto would literally make us stand up. And until you actually pitch someone, could you sit? So it was a little bit of like a friendly competition. Like if you were still standing at the end of the hour, you're kind of like, haha, you're still standing, I'm sitting. Like it became like a really fun thing to do. So like, if that's something that you find like, oh, that could actually be fun, you should do it with your team. But standing up, and the second thing is, I feel like not a lot of people are going to want to hear this, but cold calling consecutively and just sticking to it for 30 minutes every single day, no matter how many calls you get through, it doesn't have to be a whole lot. It could just be 10 that you focus on every single day. And being consistent is automatically going to make you more confident, because the second you pitch someone, I always find that like, if I go through 30 calls and I get a million voicemails and then I pitch one person, I'm so nervous for that call. But after, it's like this exhilarating feeling where you get the energy and it's kind of like that adrenaline rush that you do want to like keep going. So it's just staying consistent, being really confident, like having that confidence in yourself to just pitch one person and know that if you pitch that one person, you're going to want to keep going. And at the end of the day, like it is still the quickest way to book a meeting. Like there are stats out there where they say like the quickest way is over the phone, get what you need right then and there. So my tip is just like stand up, be confident, and do it every single day, even if it's just 30 minutes.
Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, because I saw this in one of your videos, the feeling of anxiety and nerves and doubting yourself, that doesn't really go away. You're just really good at acting and taking action in spite of that.
It doesn't go away. I mean, like you got to fight it. And like, there's so many ways to get through it. Like cold call, like with your coworkers, like don't do it alone. I know a lot of people that first start an SDR role, they kind of like want to go into a phone booth where I used to do it in a WeWork to film. But honestly, at the end of the day, I don't really think that's the best thing to do, because the best way you're going to learn is hearing other people around you cold calling. The second you hear the person next to you like book a meeting, you're going to be like, damn, like I really need to book a meeting. I want to get on the leaderboard. So like do it with people that will like help you push through, you know, if someone just booked a meeting, ask them what worked for them, like listen to their tone. That's the best way to learn.
So you two, if we could quickly rattle off, what is something that you have done or continue to do to get in the mindset? We'll start with you, Nick. What is like kind of your routine? How do you get prepped? And you've had to dial it down for our time together today, but you probably dial it up.
I'm so excited. I'll tell you, so I've got two mantras that I lean on really, really heavily when it comes to cold calling. The first, I think it actually echoes one of the things you shared, Sarah, which is you don't have to feel good to get started, but you do have to get started to feel good. I don't care how long you've been cold calling. You've been doing it for so long and you still have that anxious feeling in your stomach.
Yeah.
I've been making some cold calls recently, prospecting my own sponsors, and I get that really, really anxious, nervous feeling. It will not go away. And so you've got to be able to separate how you feel inside from taking action. There is zero prerequisite that you feel like making cold calls in order to actually go take action. So that's the first one. The other thing that I remind myself is that my success in sales is going to be determined by the number of uncomfortable conversations that I'm willing to go seek out. And no doubt, cold calling is the best and the fastest way, to your point, to go have those uncomfortable conversations. And so you got to do it. And once you actually start taking action, you get in the groove. Once you have that first pitch, you feel good and then you can get going. You got to get started though. That is the most important thing.
I love the, just to tag on what you said, I learned this through therapy, through something called the CPT triangle. It was the act of separating how you feel about something from your behavior. Yes. Those don't have to be connected.
Yes.
You know, we can separate those. I love that. Armand, what about you? You have like, you two are like polar opposite styles, I feel like, in terms of energy that you bring into it. But do you do anything different from what these two have shared?
So big believer that you feel your first five dials are always your worst five dials.
Yeah.
Always. You will not feel good until probably your first, usually your second connect, right? And so it all becomes a game on how do you hack getting started? And so I believe that you need to give yourself sticks until you respond well to carrots. Mm. And so the way that I do that is I do something called habit stacking, which is from Atomic Habits. And so I take the thing that I want to do and I put it behind the thing that I need to do. So for example, you walk into the office, you walk into the sales floor, you talk to your coworkers, you go check LinkedIn, you check your inbox. I'm not allowed to do any of that stuff. The night before, I'm preparing all my research. I'm preparing my 40 dials for the next day. When I walk in, I'm not allowed to open my inbox until I hit my 40. And if that means I literally stare at my computer and the blank desktop for 8 hours straight, and do not move a single deal forward, that is what will happen unless I make my cold calls. And so you have to force yourself to start. And then eventually you start to realize it's similar to cold plunging. Those first few cold plunges, those first few minutes, they suck so bad. But then you start to realize once I get to that third minute, oh man, I feel great. And then your body naturally just realizes, oh, I'm supposed to do this thing first, even though that first minute is always miserable.
side note, cold plunging. If you haven't done it, do it.
It's pretty
helps with anxiety. Recently got into it. It's great.
Oh, it's so good. It's funny as you guys share this, what I was thinking is getting great at cold calling is about like kind of subtly torturing yourself a bit and like getting comfortable with it. Let's dig into some more tactical things around the mechanics of the call. So we've talked a little bit about mindset, workflow. What we want to dig into now is how do we actually chunk the call into parts? And typically the way we look at this is intro, hook, and close. So your intro, your first 60 to 90 seconds, your hook, what happens in the middle part of the call, having dialogue with the prospect, finding a problem, et cetera, and the close, securing the meeting. So let's talk intro. Nick, I want to kick this first question your way.
Yep.
What are the most common mistakes that reps that you have worked with, seen, mistakes you've made yourself when you think about the first 60 to 90 seconds, because that's where 80%+ of cold calls tend to fail in that first 60, 90 seconds.
Yep.
What are some of the common mistakes that you see in here?
I think the biggest thing is, so let's put ourselves in the prospect's shoes for a second. Most prospects, myself included, they get dozens of like robo dials a day, cold calls a day if you're a senior level prospect from all different types of salespeople. You've got the salespeople selling your extended car warranty, refinancing your student loan debt. There's all sort of like the garbage telemarketers. And then there's what I think you are if you're a salesperson, which is you're probably making a well-researched or at the very least pretty well-targeted cold call. And there's context for why you are making that cold call, whether it's you found a trigger, a piece of research that made you say, hey, I should call this person, or they're very, very tight in your ICP. Like, I think you might notice, oh, someone's hiring and you're like, okay, I need to call anyone who company's hiring.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of salespeople fail to make that abundantly clear to the prospect upfront. You always talk about in your opener, to heard the name tossed around opener, you give them context upfront. And I think a lot of salespeople fail to do that. And so what they'll do is they'll get themselves lumped in with most other salespeople by opening with, hey, Jason, this is Nick Sigelski. How are you doing today? And we both know that, like, I don't really care how you're doing. I'm trying to sell you something. And so we're already leading with, like, it's sort of disingenuous. Like, I'm lying. I'm like, I don't care how you're doing. And you know that. Or I'll say, hey, did I catch you at a bad time? When we're literally making a cold call, of course it is a bad time. So I always use like a what I call a tailored permission opener, where I might say something like, if I call Sarah, I'm like, hey, Sarah, I just finished reading your job posting about the new AEs your team is hiring for. My name's Sarah, and I know I'm calling you out of the blue. Do you mind if I get half a minute? I'll share why I called you specifically, and then you can tell me whether or not it's worth a chat. And what I'm doing there is I'm actually leading with the context. I saw you were hiring for those AEs, and that gets them to sit up and say, oh, this is not just like a random telemarketing call. This is a targeted, intentional cold call.
Yes. So I think a couple of things to double down on there and highlight is, I think we can all agree here, prospects don't pick up cold calls on purpose. Mm. Like, they thought you were someone else.
Yeah.
So context, that word is really interesting, because you're trying to help the prospect. You're really trying to show them that, you use the word telemarketer. I use this when I train reps. Yeah. You're trying to shift from telemarketer to respected peer. Mm. And the way that you do that is by adding context and researching, right? So I wanted to ask you, Sarah, you shared like hooks and relevance. There's a couple of methods that you use at the beginning to create immediate relevance. One of them was like referrals, mentioning a competitor, looking for something that you have in common. How do you, as soon as the prospect says hello, what happens from there, and how do you hook and add relevance there in that first 30 seconds?
Yeah. So I feel like a lot of people that are probably on here have seen a lot of my openers, which are a little bit cheeky. I definitely go in with like, you're going to hate me. This is a cold call. Can I have 30 seconds to chat? I get a lot of like laughter from that. And they're like, all right, let's see what you got. Or I say, what did I catch you in the middle of? And I'm able to get like a little bit of a, wait a second, like, you know, what's going on, but they tell me what they're in the middle of. And I'm able to build rapport from that too. Or a little bit what Nick says, like show that you did immediate research and kind of going with that too. But right after they allow me to pitch is when I'll go in with, right after I go with my opener is when I go into my hook really quickly. And that will be like the referrals or companies that I've worked with within their industry to build familiarity. Sometimes I'll mention a company and they're like, oh, my buddy's at that company. And I'm like, oh, do you know so-and-so? Because we're really, really familiar with our book of business and the people that are our points of contact in that business too. But I think like the biggest thing is like what I mentioned yesterday too, is like, don't take 20, 30 minutes to do that. Like, just take like a first, like 3 to 5 minutes before you're about to call that person. And all of that information can be found on like LinkedIn, their website, or Google. So like, it's really not preparing like that much. It's just showing the prospect that you did a tiny bit of information and you're able to have like that creative opener. But those are pretty much like the first things that I do right when someone picks up. It's just like a really cheeky opener followed by a really quick hook to show them that I did a little bit of research and I know what I'm calling for.
So I think the thing that we all, correct me if I'm wrong, is have consensus on is that there's some sort of permission-based element to the opener. There's some sort of engagement.
He does it a little differently though. You should hear Armand's.
Have you heard her name tossed around?
Yeah.
Opener?
Finish the riff though.
So there's, at least from us three, permission-based element to the opener. And then there's also some context that's provided. You do it right after the opener. You provide the context at the front. I'm a really big fan of that too.
Yeah, hi, we're Nick. Like opposite.
Yeah, you guys are doing the opposite. Yeah. But the bottom line is, in that first 30 seconds, we are adding context. Mm-hmm. That's probably where we all agree.
Yeah.
Armand, you have one that I'm a big fan of. I teach this to reps and give you credit, of course. The have you heard our name tossed around opener. What does that sound like?
Yeah. So I used to sell life insurance, which is a riveting career. And brutal. And they start by having you call like your mom, your uncle, and then you run out of people and you're like, oh, barber. And then like, you can't get hair.
Your family
anymore.
Just starts to hate you at that point.
Yeah. Switch barbers at one point.
And literally I'm like, please, and I have shaved head and everything. I can't go to my barber anymore. And so that's when most people quit. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go cold. And so I started calling all of the partners of the law firms in downtown Los Angeles, right? And these folks are like, all of them are making seven figures. All of them get peppered with cold calls, if you can even get to them and not get past their gatekeeper, all that stuff. And I've never been so eviscerated in my entire life on the phones. I made $800, 4 weeks in a row, $800, $200 a week, zero meetings. And it was because every single time, I was 19 years old, I'd pick up the phone, like, hey, it's Armand from Northwestern Mutual. How's your day going? Right? Or did I catch you at a bad time? And it's like, they could smell it. Yeah. They could smell it in my tone. They could smell it in my opener. It's because one, my tone sounded like everyone else. And then two, I was using the same pleasantries that they had heard from 300 other telemarketers. Right? And so I almost quit. And this guy named Brandon Matloff walked by, who is a seven-figure insurance producer. And he's like, hey kid, like no one's going to book a meeting with you for that thing. And I was like, thanks. And he's like, I work with a bunch of people in that office. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, just say you work with a few other partners in the office. It's Armand from Northwestern. Have you heard my name tossed around? And I was like, I haven't worked with them. He's like, that's why you're going to bring me along. He's like, and Northwestern works with many other people in that office. There's some common thread between your existing customers and them. And so I was like, yes, I'll do it. So I pick up the phone. I'm like, drop my voice down a couple notches, just like him, sounded real suave. And I was like, hey, Jason, I work with a few other partners in the downtown LA office of Skadden. It's Armand from Northwestern. Hey, have you heard my name tossed around? And he goes, well, no, I haven't, but how can I help you? And I'm like, oh, now you're nice. I was like, now you're nice. And the reason for that is I open like a peer. And even if he isn't interested in what I have to offer, he's not going to be a complete jerk because I work with other people of his stature. In other words, I've established that I'm one of his peers early on in the process, at the front of the cold call, before I've even introduced myself.
I love that. So I think there's a couple of things with the intro. Besides the words that you say, I want to talk about tonality, because this is something that honestly I find very hard to teach, but it's very easy to call out. And there's this mode. Let us know in the chat, actually. Let us know in the chat if you have either experienced this in the past or you still kind of struggle with it. You almost like transform into a different human being. And there's like this customer service voice that you use. Mm-hmm. Hi, Armand, it's Jason with Outbound Squad. How have you been? And you transform into a different human being.
Yeah.
So I want to kick this question your way, Armand, real quick. Pointers on tonality. There's the whole thing around uptalk and upspeak that people talk about. If someone is trying to sound more like themselves and really break through as a human being, what advice would you have for them?
Yeah. So the first thing is you have to notice it. So I would always run this test with the SDR team, especially with new hires. I'd be like, go hang out with your SDR friends at lunch or whatever. And your job is to secretly record conversations between you and another SDR, which sounds a little bit creepy, when they're not paying attention. And I want you to save that recording. And then once that SDR is making cold calls, I want you to listen to that recording and then the cold call recording side by side. And they should sound exactly the same. And you will be amazed how many people are like, I sound like that on a cold call. And so step number one is just noticing it. The two most common culprits from there are number one, uptones, and then number two, talking way too quickly. The higher up you go in the chain of command with executives, the slower they talk. Right now, I'm intentionally talking very slowly. And the reason for this is I didn't know you were going to pass me that question. So I need time to compose my thoughts. Otherwise, I'm going to start stammering and start using ums and ahs and all this stuff and sound really, really nervous, right? But if I slow it down, I give myself time to think. That's number one. Number two, a lot of times when people are unsure or if you're asking a question, you'll end in an uptone. This is Armand from Northwestern Mutual. And it's okay to end with questions in an uptone or if you're leading to a point. But most of your sentences, if you listen to your conversations with friends, end in downtones. And that has nothing to do with having a high-pitched voice or a low-pitched voice. So if you can do those two things, if you can slow down, and if you notice some of your uptones and maybe have your friend record you, you'll spot the differences and you can just start to calm down a little bit on your cold calls.
Jason, one thing, we just had Chris Voss on our podcast and I asked him this because I've struggled with uptones in the past. And I asked him, it's actually funny, one thing you said earlier, you're talking about standing up and your body language. And I'm very uncomfortable talking about cold calling seated because when I make my cold calls, I stand up and I'm like, oh gosh, it's kind of weird being here because like I can't get the body language to elicit the right tone of voice. But one thing Chris shared with us is if you want to get a downtone out of yourself, you tilt your chin down. And if you tilt your chin up, it'll actually help you get the uptone. So if you want to have an uptone when you're asking a question, tilt the chin up. If you want to have a downtone, tilt your chin down.
That's how I see Nicole.
Have you heard my next house around?
I'm going to have the worst double chin in my
TikTok. Oh, no. I want to see that. If you do that, that would make my year. I don't have a very exciting life. That would make my year.
So let's talk about what's next. So we do a permission-based opener or the have you heard our name tossed around opener, and we get some sort of agreement that, yeah, you can have the microphone for a second. Nick, you know, what is it that you want? Let's talk about what to say next. The common mistake that I see here is people get into product speak and they start talking about their solution and there's no context provided to the prospect. So Nick, I'll kick this question your way. Okay, I did my permission-based opener. Prospect hands me the mic. What should come out of my mouth next? Because the biggest mistake you can make here is just to start pitching and then the person's going to give you a ton of objections. What's the approach here?
Yeah, so first piece is I think a lot of salespeople get taught, I think this gets taught a lot in like high school and college, the idea of a value proposition where you're talking about the great things that you can do, the great things that you bring to the table, the great things about your company. And the problem I think with a value proposition is again, put yourself in the shoes of the prospect. We've interrupted their day. And even if we led with some context, they don't really know what the heck's going on, right? They opted in. All right, Nick, go ahead. You've got a minute. What I want to do is I want to use what's called a problem proposition because I want to make it very, very clear to the person that I'm talking to the types of problems that we can make go away rather than talking about the great things that my company does. The reason for that is if I give a value proposition, it is now on my prospect to figure out how that value proposition actually connects to any of the things going on in their life and the problems that they might want to make go away. So I need to do that work for them to reduce the cognitive load that I put on the person that I am calling out of the blue and just tell them, here's the problem we might go away. So for me, when I'm selling law firm billing technology, which is what I used to sell for a long time, I would say something like, they say, all right, Nick, go ahead. You've got a minute. I'd say, great. Thank you, Jason. You could even start a timer if you'd like. I want to show that like, I'm not like you talking about slowing down. I don't want to go too fast. Yeah. I want to have a little bit of humor. Like I'm comfortable and I'm okay, whatever the outcome is. You can even start a timer if you want, Jason. Look, Jason, the reason that I called you is I talk to a lot of CFOs of insurance defense law firms. And most of the folks that I talk to tell me that they're really, really frustrated with all of the deductions, rejections, and appeals that they get on the e-bills that they have to send the insurance companies that they end up billing on behalf of the clients they work with. Look, I know I'm totally calling you out of the blue, but that's a problem that we make go away for about 300 different law firms in the US. And I'm wondering if you might be open to learning more when I'm not cold calling you out of the blue. And what I'm trying to do here is saying, hey, I talk to people like you, CFOs of insurance defense law firms. Here's the thing that they tell me they're frustrated with. And I want to use problem-based language, frustrated, anxious about, concerned with, angry at their wit's end with. That helps orient me around a problem rather than a solution. And then what I want to do is I just want to say, hey, we make that go away. And I'd like to explore this with you further when I'm not cold calling you out of the blue. And what I'm doing here is I don't expect them to be like, all right, sure. I expect them to be like, well, how do you do that? How do you make that go away? And now I have consent again, permission again, to move to the next stage of the cold call, which is having a conversation around how we might be able to make that work. So that's usually what I'll do.
Love it. And just because the people here on the show are wanting it, can you give your opener real quick too?
Tailored permission opener?
Yep.
So if I'm selling to law firms, so let's attack it to the one that I'm going to do is... I don't want to do too much research. I don't want to look up every single law firm. I just want to look up something that's sort of relevant to what I'm selling. So what I would usually do is like, if a law firm had won a case recently, which often they'll announce on their site, because they want to brag about the things they've done. But when you win a case, usually that means you have to collect money. And that has some implication for billing. So I might call Sarah and say, hey, Sarah, I just finished reading about the big Acme case you all won. Look, my name's Nick Sigelski, and I know I'm calling you totally out of the blue. Do you mind if I take half a minute? I'll tell you why that case win prompted me to call you specifically, and then you can tell me whether or not it's worth the chat. Sarah goes, okay. And what I might include then when I give that problem proposition is a quick attachment of like, look, usually when I talk to law firm CFOs and they win a case, that means they have to collect money. And a lot of the insurance defense law firm CFOs I talk to tell me it can be really frustrating having to bill these clients only to get deductions and rejections and appeals from these insurance companies because the bills aren't in the right super convoluted format that they have to send them in. And I'm calling you about something that I think can ease a lot of the frustration related to that. We do it for about 300 different law firms in the US. And I guess I'm wondering, would you be open to learning more when I'm not cold calling you out of the blue? So that's sort of how it would go from a cold call perspective for me.
Cool. Sarah, same to you, if you could, because the people are wanting to hear again, an example of a permission-based opener that you use. And then what does that next part when the person says yes? What's an example of what you might say there?
Sure. So I'll go with my favorite one, which you guys hear all the time, but you know, hey Jay, it's Sarah over at Pareto. You're going to hate me. This is a cold call, but I was wondering if you just had 27 seconds to chat. Going with like a weird number too, also sometimes gets a little chuckle. So I highly recommend that. They say yes. And I say, great, Jay, the reason I was giving you a call, I was actually at a networking event yesterday where I met, you know, Nick Sigelski. Did I say that right?
You did, but that's okay. Sigelski. Don't worry about it.
You're not as popular as her.
Really not. No, I'm not. She is way cooler than me.
Nick, he actually recommended I reach out to you. The reason for my call is, you know, XYZ. It'd be super ignorant of me to tell you exactly how I could support you with some of the things I just mentioned right this second. But I was wondering if you had, you know, an extra 30 minutes tomorrow or Friday at 2 p.m. or 4 p.m. where we can actually chat. And I go right for the hard close, which people know that I'm a huge fan of as well.
Your X or Y, is that similar to Nick in that these are common problems that you hear?
Yeah. So my X or Y is, yeah, sometimes it could be a common problem. So sometimes if I do ask a question after my actual pitch and I don't hard close, my first question is always like, what are your top three sales challenges at the minute? And all of a sudden you kind of get like a, wait a second, like, why are you asking me that question? But I almost always get an answer, which is awesome because you could just use that to then say, well, that's exactly why we should meet. Like, like a lot of, you know, prospects right now, they're saying, you know, the biggest challenge right now on my sales team is finding really good sales talent, and we're a recruitment agency, right? So I'm like, great. That's exactly why we should meet, because I want to tell you exactly how we can help you find great quality talent in the market right now. Because it is a really big challenge that a lot of people have. So yeah, that would be my X or Y.
Love it. Armand, again, give the people a taste. If there's a different intro that you will sometimes use, give them a taste of that. And then what would happen next?
Cool.
After the person
said opener to value prop, first 60 seconds of a cold call. So you'd open with the heard the name tossed around opener. And let's assume that we're using the same life insurance example. Very similar problem prop you'll hear that Nick used. So I'll say like, hey, Jason, we work with a few other partners in the downtown LA office of Skadden. It's Armand at Northwestern. Have you heard her name tossed around? They could say yes or no. It doesn't matter. Same exact thing happens afterwards. Let's say they say no and be like, oh, shoot. I guess I'm not as popular as I thought I was. Well, look, Jason, look, the reason for my call is, you know, typically when I'm talking to other Skadden partners, like they all have the sort of weird blessing but horrible problem where you make so much money that you give away half of it every year around tax day, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And I can't do much to help you out this year. Yeah, but the reason that I'm reaching out is I've helped other Skadden partners, you know, do things like investing in certain types of vehicles and whatnot to make sure that you keep most of the money that you've made throughout the year. I think you're probably going to have all that stuff taken care of, to be honest with you. But would you be completely against me dropping by your office when I'm there next week, if for no other reason to put a face to the name? And so there are a couple pieces of that. So number one, lead with the problem. You make so much money and it's like triggering. I want to trigger them a little bit, bring them back to the memory of tax day when they literally had to give away half their paycheck. Triggering problem. A minimum amount about my solution so that they know I'm not like a financial guru who's going to try to give them like Bitcoin, like off in Scotland type of like money laundering tactics, right? And then a push away before I ask. right? The push away, the before, the ask is, you're probably going to have this all set, or my guess is you have this totally taken care of, or you're never going to buy this thing, right? But would you be open to learning more just so you can get a sense of how I've helped other people like you? And again, most people will not say yes. Very rarely after any of these will someone say, yes, I'm in. But I've used the context and the familiar thread to show them that I've helped other people like them, which will make the next objection land softer when it comes.
Yes. So for those of you watching and listening, we have permission-based opener or a have you heard our name tossed around opener. You call it a problem prop.
Yeah, we call it a problem,
call it a problem prop. What do you call it?
I don't think I call it anything.
She's like, I just do it. It's natural. I was born to do this. I call it a reverse pitch. We all really agree on this part where this is the part to nail in the cold call. If you can get in their language what you hear most in common from the peers that you speak with, if you're an account executive, pay really close attention to in your intro calls. What do people tell you is the reason they want to talk to you? If you're an SDR and you maybe don't have some of that information, listen to recordings of sales calls with your account executive. If you nail this part, in my experience, you should be getting, like oftentimes when I'm doing this with clients or doing it myself, I'll get responses like, wait, yeah, we're dealing with that. Who are you again? What do you do? Like you want to get responses like that where people feel like you're a fly on the wall of their virtual meetings. Let's talk about what to do next. So we have the intro. What I want to get into now is the hook and the close. If you guys are cool with it, we have 24 minutes left. I think we could continue doing this deep dive on there. So with the hook, I want to kick this question your way, Sarah. I think we may have differing opinions among us on this part. I'm a very big proponent of if you don't have pain or something frustrating, the person's just not going to be very motivated to show up to that meeting. So I personally like to use that hook part and teach a concept I call question stacking, where I'm going to, like, once I figure out that recruiting in your case is important to them and they need to hire more SDRs, I want to speak a little bit to how people like them might get the job done and what might be frustrating about that and like kind of tease that out of them. Is that similar or different to your approach?
I think like sometimes, you know, if they don't have a pain, it's creating that pain and like teaching them that there actually is a pain, even though they don't think there is. So I think sometimes like if I actually get into the questioning part of, you know, I don't hard close and I start asking them some questions. And a lot of the time I'll get, you know, we're actually all good. We have a great internal team. Like we hire the best people ever. And that's where I'm actually like, oh my God, I'm so stuck. Like, I don't know where to go from here. Like, and typically what I'll say is like, well, it sounds like you guys are honestly a really well-oiled machine. Like you just said, like you've used an agency or you've used your internal team. If you could wave your magic wand and improve one thing, what would it be? And I almost always get an answer from that. Yeah. And it's just really listening on that call of like, how can I turn this around and create a pain point? You won't always every single time, right? Because a lot of the times you'll get everything's great, everything's dandy, click, right? So like give yourself some grace. But I think it's just like finding any single way that you could just ask an open-ended question that's going to give you an answer that you can build off of. So like that's one really big thing that I do is just like, if I could wave your magic wand, you know, around to approve one thing, what would it be? And you can ask that for any industry, no matter where you're calling from, and use whatever they say to actually say, well, yeah, I mean, that's something that we could actually help you improve. And then they start thinking, oh, maybe I do have like a pain point, or maybe that is something I could improve that I didn't think we actually could, or that I thought was a problem. So I think it's just like, you have to create something, even though there's not a pain. But I know like, we obviously think two different, you know, points of view on this point is like, there has to be a pain, but I'm kind of like, there doesn't always have to be a pain, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think a pain or sometimes a large aspiration. I'm thinking of some clients that I've worked with, you know, it's not always like a big problem they're hiring me for. It could be, we need to double this thing and we can do it really quickly. I like this pros and cons approach to that objection too, where if someone was like, hey, we're hiring, we do all of that internally. Hey, that's great. Like, sounds like you're totally taken care of. Usually what I hear from sales leaders is that they love that it's really quick and they don't have to work through a third party. But one of the things we oftentimes hear is that HR doesn't quite have the same hiring style or preferences that you do. And sometimes you get people that are a little bit of a waste of time. How does that compare to your experience?
Yeah.
And like almost like suggesting stuff that you hear. Love that question though, that you have.
I love what you just said too, because it's a lot of also what I say on cold calls. It's like not trying to change anything that you guys are currently doing. Yeah. However, more often than not, the SDR role is usually overlooked in terms of like most important hire. Mm-hmm. And I've seen so many articles on LinkedIn. I don't know if you guys have seen it too, but where it's talking about how the SDR and the BDR role is sometimes like from a CEO, like a CEO will say it's the most important role in any organization. And sometimes HR, like, or, you know, internal recruitment team doesn't actually realize that because they don't realize how much effort it actually takes to be really successful at that role. And that's ultimately the role that drives revenue for the organization. So once you actually tell that to a VP, they're like, oh my God, wait a second. Maybe HR doesn't know what they're looking for when it comes to what makes a really good SDR. And what you just said is actually what I get. A lot of people are like, okay, actually, yeah, let me take that meeting because I need to understand how we could best recruit this position.
Yeah. One of the things, I learned this from the folks at Zoom Info, actually. There's the sponsor, ironically. They call it customer voice. I don't know if they came up with that or not. It's speaking through the lens of what you hear other people like them talk about versus saying you're doing it wrong.
Right.
Or, you know, we can do it better. You weren't doing that, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to get into that mode and almost take the objection personally.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. from the prospect. Nick, active listening, like the middle part of the call.
Yeah.
Like where you're asking questions and just being able to like shut up and like listen and like really listen. Do you have any advice for that?
Shuts up.
Well, he's right. My nature is to always want to like talk. Like, I love talking. I really love it. The biggest thing that has helped me is this cup of water.
I didn't know if you like put the cup up your mouth or
quit. Okay. I'll tell you what I do. So, because I historically, my tendency is to listen with the intent to respond as opposed to listen with the intent to listen. And I'll hear somebody say something and I'm really, really excited to be like, oh my gosh, like it's really interesting because we can help with that. And boom, 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 boom. What I do now is somebody finishes talking and I force myself to take a quick sip of water. And what this does is it's an artificial pause that I create for myself. It works really well on Zoom meetings. And we're talking about cold calling today, but it works really great on meetings also because it shows, hey, I'm going to take a second before I respond. So that's honestly been my biggest thing. I'll even put my phone on mute sometimes because it forces me to take myself off mute before I talk.
Yes. Whatever little quirks you guys watching have, if you find yourself cutting off a prospect in the middle of a cold call, these are just little habits that you can create to help. Armand, middle part of the call, we've gotten a chance to do our problem prop. Mm-hmm. This middle part, if they're not immediately like, yes, like let's meet. What advice do you have for creating dialogue, asking questions, like really creating intrigue to really set up the close for the call?
Yeah. So I'll tie together two of the things that both of you all have mentioned, which is number one, Jason, you talked about if there's no pain, how do you unpack it? And Sarah, you had some tactics around that. And two, Nick, you talked about active listening. And my goal with the first 60 seconds is actually to sprint to the first objection. Like I want to get to the first objection because a lot of cold calls don't even get to an objection. They just end in a brisk hang up or a quick not interested. Mm-hmm. You might not even get to the pitch because you screwed up the first 60 seconds. So if I can establish myself as the peer, my goal is to start with the first objection, and that usually begins a conversation, right? The way that you turn an objection into a conversation is I call it splitting objections, and it's part of the Mr. Miyagi method. If you say, I'm not interested, I could return with a pitch, but that's both of us talking at each other now. Yeah. And you're going to win because you're going to hang up. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to Miyagi with your objection.
Miyagi.
In other words, the first thing
that I'm like, what is can you that? Define that?
We will
have
define.
You seen Karate Kid?
Like, you're making us what? Feel old.
Uh-oh.
We're total boomers, dude.
Oh, no.
Miyagi. Karate Kid. Mr. Miyagi. Cobra Kai for you new folks. But there are three steps of it. And
it's your face.
And the whole premise is there's this premise in Karate Kid where I can't believe I'm explaining this. There's a premise in Karate Kid where
the panda
one is throwing.
Is that the movie with the panda?
No, that's Kung Fu Panda.
So, my goodness.
Someone throws a punch, and there's this sensei called Mr. Miyagi, and you don't counter the punch, you don't block the punch, you wax the punch off, and then you wax it on. You redirect the momentum of the punch. And that's what you have to do with objections to create conversations. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to agree with the objection. So if someone says, I'm not interested, I'm going to say, hey, Nick, I totally get that. Honestly, you probably would have called me if you were. This one's on me. Shh, sit for a second. Now, Nick is going to take a breather. He's like, oh, good. Someone's not going to commission breath pressure sail me. That's step one. Number two is I want to split the objection. People tend to be more open to conversations when you, one, demonstrate you were listening, and then two, give them options to grab onto. And so after I say that, I'll be like, hey, just so no one calls you again, could you give me a sense? Is it because you have something in place? You're doing this in-house? Or I just totally caught you off guard and you hate getting cold calls? It's got to be one of those three things. Or they'll give me a fourth. But if I just said, why aren't you interested? Now it's a confrontation. All of a sudden, Nick is like, whoa, what's going on? What I did is I agreed with it. And I'm like, one, two, three. Which one is it? I'm hearing you out. And now they're going to share their actual situation because I've removed the pressure of the sale and I've demonstrated that I understood one of the three situations that they're in. And I said, just so no one cold calls you again, could you give me the actual reason? And that will give me the real reason that allows me to have a conversation and then use their actual solution to uncover some pain from there.
So there's a lot of brilliance in what you said there. I love the Mr. Miyagi framework. And you guys, we're old farts apparently now. Yeah. Sarah, your face Miyagi-ing. Was hilarious so when he was saying, you're like, what is he talking about? Okay, there's a couple things that I think apply to just conversations, sales conversations in general, and it's reducing friction.
Yep.
When you give a multiple choice, you're making it easier to answer, and executives especially appreciate nothing more than like ease of like communicating with you.
Yeah.
So I think like reducing friction, giving options. The other thing that you're doing too is you're demonstrating like, I've done this before.
Yep.
And when you can almost read the prospect's mind, that's when you get people to really lean in. So let's talk about, I want to give actually one quick pro tip here for the middle part of the call. If before the call, you think about what are the common priorities that the prospect might have, that's the problem prop or your opener or reverse pitch that I call. And then think about what the current solutions are and then the problems associated with those. So think about what is the thing that your prospect really wants to do? How do they get the job done now? And what are the problems? And this kind of fuels the talk track for you to be able to have good dialogue in the middle.
Jason, can I ask you about that? Because yeah. It sounds like, you know, we've all talked about what we're doing in the middle of the call, whether it's going for the meeting right away. I'm leading with very problem-oriented language, as is Armand. It sounds like what you're doing is maybe after that initial problem prop, if they ask you more, when you actually have a little bit of back and forth, what you're doing is you're almost piling on to the problem and being like, yeah, you know, they say, yeah, you know, that is frustrating. Our bills have been getting rejected and there's been a lot of issues. What you're doing is you're being like, yeah, you know, a lot of the CFOs I talk to. And then what you're doing is you're saying, hey, they're either doing it this way or this way or this way. And you're basically showing, you're giving even more context around the problems and the sort of half-baked solutions that you're seeing from folks as a way to demonstrate your expertise in that problem space and also encourage them to share more, which should solidify your ability to land and secure the meeting. Is that how you're doing it? Because it sounds like you're doing this with intention here.
The way that this, I'll give you a really practical example. Here's the way it sounds. So I have a client that sells into contact center leaders in like Fortune 1000s.
Yeah.
So they'll say their reverse pitch. Hey, a lot of the contact center leaders I talk to, the number one priority they have is reducing cost to serve.
Yeah.
So they have FAQ pages, they have chat, but people look for the phone number and they decide to pick up the call anyways, and you want to reduce call volume.
Yeah.
How does that align with your priorities? Yeah, that's definitely. Well, hey, I'm really curious, like that FAQ page, a lot of times what we hear is that people have reworked it with their digital team a bunch of times. They put all this effort, hundreds of thousands of dollars into it, and then people just call in anyways. How's that compare to your experience? Mm. And you just get them talking about it. And if you nail that part of it, I've talked about how they've tried to address the problem and the problem itself. And then that becomes the reason for the close. Well, hey, I know I said it'd be short today. That is the exact problem that we've solved for companies like Nordstrom and several other retailers. How about we unpack this a little bit more when I'm not cold calling you in the middle of your day? Do you got your calendar handy? So you can just like seamlessly transition from you want to do this thing. Yeah. You've tried to solve it this way. And I've done that in like 2 minutes. And then I get to segue. And what I want to get to now is the close. I think the purpose of the close is get off the phone. Like, you should be the one to suggest a next step. I think sometimes people get stuck because if you're watching and listening, let us know if this resonates with you. You kind of don't know where to take the call next, and it kind of naturally fizzles out, and the person says, send me an email.
Yeah.
So you want to end on a high. So how do you transition, Sarah, when you know you've got the prospect hooked and you've had some good dialogue? How do you transition into asking for the meeting? I mean, maybe it's not even a transition for you because you've already asked
like,
a time or two.
Yeah. So big believer in hard close. However, I think where a lot of people get stuck, just to kind of emphasize what you were just saying, is, you know, SDRs ask so many questions, and sometimes they ask really, really good questions, but they keep going, and you're like, I'm like over behind them, and I'm like, close for the meeting. Like, close. Like, I'll literally write it on a big like sheet. I'm like, close. Cause they're just asking so many, questions. But I think, like, right when, you know, you ask them a question and they come back with something, I'm a big believer in saying, that's exactly why we should meet. How about we meet tomorrow at 2 or 4 PM Eastern time, and I could walk you around exactly how we could help support you with what you just said. Mm-hmm. So like, take advantage of what they're saying. Goes back to what you guys were talking about before, about active listening. It's just all about, you know, just grabbing that one little thing, saying that's exactly why we should meet. And you could use that for anything, no matter what they say. Like, if they say, what are next steps? Well, great. Well, you know, we spoke briefly about this. This is what you mentioned you're struggling with right now. How about tomorrow, 2 or 4 o'clock, we could talk about a little bit more about how I can help support you. So I think it's just also making it as easy as possible for the prospect to say yes to you as well. So that's why I always like giving like 2 days and 2 times. So like tomorrow or Friday at 2 or 4 o'clock, because a lot of these times, right, like for me, I'm calling a lot of CEOs, CROs, CMOs, and they're not always necessarily at their desk, or they're doing a million things at once. So if you could give them a day and time where they can at least picture in their head their diary or their calendar, you just want to make it as easy as possible for them to say, actually, you know what, I do have a gap in my calendar tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Like, yes, definitely. Let's do that. And then what I also really like doing after you actually close for the meeting and they say yes, is initially, like, everyone's intention is, let me just get off the phone. Okay, I got it. Like, I'm good. But it's what we like to call the departure drill. So now you have it in your hands, right? And like, you have the meeting, you're like, yes, like, I did it. Don't hang up just yet. So say, okay, great. Like, now, you know, just so I'm best prepared for this meeting tomorrow at 4 o'clock, what would you like me to tailor it to based on what we said today so that I could best prepare for that meeting? The second question is, who else would you like to add on to that meeting? Because let's try to get as many decision makers as we can on one call so you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone. And last but not least, make sure the email is right that you have. I have so many SDRs, and me as an SDR as well, thought I had the right email and I didn't. And then you send over, you get everything, you book the meeting, and they never end up getting the calendar invite. So like, in that departure drill, ask like the simplest question. I'm just qualifying all of their contact information, because the last thing you want to do is go through all that hard work, feel amazing, and then they never get the meeting. And then all of a sudden you show up to that meeting with your AE and you realize like you don't have that check mark next to them saying that they're actually coming just because you typed it in wrong, or maybe they didn't get it wrong email. So that's kind of everything I put into the close. Just because like you have them, like get as much information as you can while you're there.
Love it. I think one thing to highlight there is the easiest way to transition is to just summarize what you heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what you do. Here's what I heard, and we can help you with that. Yeah. Let's meet.
This is exactly why we should meet. And I say those exact words, and they're like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's exactly why we should meet. And then you're like, okay, great. Let's do it.
Connect the dots.
Yeah.
Connect the dots. Let's talk confirmation real quick, Nick. So we've transitioned, we've set the meeting. What about calendar invite? There's kind of different schools of thought on this.
Yeah.
Do you recommend sending the calendar invite live while you have them on the call, waiting until afterwards? Like, this might be a point of debate for some of us.
I think in a best case scenario where you've got a prospect who's going to sit and wait for you to send a calendar invite, of course, I would like to be able to say, cool, Sarah, I just sent you a calendar invite. Just so I know we're good for that time, would you mind hitting accept on it? We're going to put some work into prepping for this thing. I think in reality, it's very, very hard to actually do that. And you're probably going to end up sending a calendar invite after the fact.
Can we talk about why that's important to at least ask for?
Oh,
because I wasn't aware of this until someone, a prospect, pointed it out to me. Gmail and Outlook, if you send a calendar invite to someone who you have not had email interaction with, it doesn't hit their calendar unless they accept it from the email.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So if you don't get them to accept on there and the email gets buried, the meeting doesn't even show up on their calendar.
Yeah, it won't show. Like, I have Google and it won't show unless you have that little check mark that shows that they actually accepted it.
Yeah.
And it does get buried and it does get kind of thrown under the rug and it won't show up on their calendar. So there are times where I have like asked, like if I've been chasing this person for a really long time and I finally booked the meeting with them after weeks and weeks and weeks of going after them, I'll literally say like, please just accept it. I'm going to send it over right now. Like, do it live. But for the most part, I'll just send it over right after the meeting. That way, if I see by the end of the day that they didn't accept it, I could just shoot them another quick message on LinkedIn or even give them another call. Like, don't be afraid to call them again. Just be like, hey, like, no, we chatted today. I sent this over. Like, did you get it? Like, I just want to make sure that you got it.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, there's nothing more embarrassing than going on that meeting with your AE and they don't show. And you know, you did everything that you can. So make sure that you actually follow through with all of it. And don't be afraid to call them again.
Yeah. So, okay. Actually, then I think what you should do is cite what you just said, where it's like, hey, I know Gmail just had a change where you and I haven't corresponded before. Yep. And sometimes it won't show up on your calendar. So we literally, like, it will seem as if I didn't do my job and dropped the ball if you don't hit accept, because it won't show up on your calendar if you don't.
Yeah, I like
that. And then I really love what you said, which is I feel like so many salespeople feel like they are inferior to their prospects or they're bothering their prospects. They agreed to a meeting with you on the phone.
Yep.
And if they haven't accepted it, you absolutely should call them again. I talk to so many salespeople who are afraid to call their prospects because they're worried about interrupting them. Oh, I'm just going to email them again. I'll send them one more email. Call them again.
They already said yes. You're just double checking for them that they got it. Like, you're doing them a favor. Like,
you look good.
Yeah.
You're doing proactive.
Yeah.
I love that. You're not an inconvenience or an interruption there. Wow. This person's a pro.
Yeah.
Hey, I love that.
Yeah.
Another quick pro tip. Get the opt-in to text them.
Mm. Yeah.
I've been doing that. It's like, by the way, is this your cell phone? Yeah. I'm assuming you might have to shoot you a quick text if anything comes up, and do it via text.
Yeah.
Instead of playing phone tag, you know, Armand, because we have like 2 minutes left.
2 minutes.
Do you have a quick tip to add anything different from these two on, like, just kind of, it could be in the cold call in general or just kind of buttoning everything up to make sure that the person shows up?
I'll give you two, whether they say yes or no to your meeting. So the first one is, if I hear an SDR on the phones that hears a prospect say, hey, just send me an email, we'll coordinate times, I'll go like this in front of them. And what this means is I'm holding a baby. And that means don't drop the baby. First thing, I promise you, you will get 10% more meetings just from this tactic. If someone doesn't have their calendar or they get overwhelmed because you suggested times, always do not ask, send a placeholder. Tell them you're going to send a placeholder. And so what I'll usually say is I'll say like, hey, Jason, totally get it. I know you're probably running between meetings. I'm going to send a hold for like next Thursday in the afternoon, so it's out of the way. That's probably going to be an incorrect time. And I'll follow up with a few other times that also work. If that hold works, would you mind just accepting it or picking another time if it doesn't? And so I'm getting on the calendar, right? Like, get the hold.
Yep.
Because it is so much less likely, without any sort of invite, without anything, for someone to be like, okay, I'm going to look at my calendar, I'm going to suggest times to you. So that's number one. Number two, I learned this from Mark Kosklow, the exit. If you get hit with two or three objections, you're going to leave with a meeting. Here's how you do it. You say, hey, Jason, honestly, I really appreciate you just having this conversation with me. I don't think this is relevant for you guys right now. And I appreciate how much you've shared with me. If it's okay with you, in 3 months, I would love to put a reminder on both of our calendars for me to touch base with you again for 5 minutes and see if anything's changed. Can I send you that calendar invite for July or August? And that is a way to get back on someone's calendar and leave with grace and exit a cold call on good terms in a way that doesn't end on a rejection.
Love it. We can end there. Thank you, everyone, for the participation today. We want to thank ZoomInfo again for sponsoring the webinar. And Sarah, Nick, Armand, this is a lot of fun. I learned a lot from you guys today.
This is awesome. Cool. Thank you.
Make sure to connect with these folks on LinkedIn. And that's all we got for you guys today. Appreciate everyone's time.
Peace.
Bye.
Later.